This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Maisel Goy is available on M.
Did you just say Maisel Bros?
I did.
There's only one bro on the show. That is me, don't you
Maisel,
know? Alice Wetterlin, what do you think?
Promazel.
Excuse me?
It's like Amazon Prime. Amazel on Promazel now. Click
Amazel on Promazel.
Activate your account. Make sure that you have the correct credit card information.
Doesn't this song sound like a bunch of little cute ants marching?
Helping
each other out?
It sounds like my kitchen. Oh my God.
Let's get into it.
I have an ant problem.
I have an uncle problem.
Hilarious. Your kitchen's full of uncles. Yeah. You can leave any food out at all.
Where's the beer? Where's the beer? Welcome to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goys. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Alice.
And we're the Maisel Goys. Back at it again on the penultimate episode.
Back at it again.
Of the season. We're in 7. Next week is 8. And then
goodbye forever.
Goodbye forever. Would you do
back
this
to
another?
Our friendship? Really?
Do you feel like we've taken a break from our friendship?
Because we see each other like every week now, so we can't hang out and talk.
I feel like
this is us hanging out and talking.
We got to do it for like 6 minutes before we came up here.
It was nice.
It
because
was
I was
nice.
On time for once.
I wasn't gonna say that.
I know. That's why I said it.
Anyway. It's episode 7. We got the finale to look forward to next week.
Yeah, which...
Mumble-inducing.
Mumble-inducing.
But you know what?
Mumblecore-inducing.
Mumblecore. So Michael Cera shows up. He's like, "Hi, what do you want?
We're going to do it.
What's going on?" Do you feel like Johnny Pemberton is like alternate universe Michael Cera?
He's better Michael Cera. Oh. If Michael Cera was like had pizzazz,
Johnny Pemberton should have been Player X.
I love Pembo.
Pembo is great.
I'm a big Pembo fan.
Yeah.
So
we love Pembo. We should have had him on the podcast next week.
We shouldn't have. No regrets.
No regrets. No ifs.
Remember how we talked about this last night at the under the willow tree?
Mm-hmm.
No regrets.
We weren't going to regret anything that we say or do because everything matters.
Everything matters, and it's the universe directs us.
You know what matters the most? Who our guest is this week.
That's true.
Oh, shit. That was a good segue. Boo, 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 ladies and gentlemen.
If you do say so yourself.
She is a stand-up. She is a comedian. And she's a woman. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Georgia Brooks.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How's
it
going?
She's also... Great. A Canadian national.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you are Canadian.
Yeah.
I thought we were just talking about Canadian culture before we turned
on
the
mic. No, that's why she said sorry 85,000 times before we started.
I open every greeting with just some Canadian trivia.
Sorry. Oh, wow, okay. Mm-hmm. A Canadian export. Last time Alice and I did a live show together, it was in the great city of Toronto.
Shut the front door.
We were there.
Yeah. We were there.
And was it what? Like, what's it?
It was hot.
Like
it was
hot.
So great. We played Drake and we danced around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it was
fire.
Amazing.
It was fire.
You legally have to play Drake. And I know that sounds like a joke, but in Canada on the radio, you do legally have to play like a certain amount of Canadian music. And now it's like Drake is on every other song.
Whoa.
Yeah, or The Weeknd. You know, it's like really.
He's Canadian as well.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The Weeknd.
Well, now you do.
The Weeknd.
The Weeknd.
It's like The Weeknd.
Weeknd. Yeah. Well, Georgia, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
So glad to have you.
Thank
so
you.
You and Alice have actually known each other for a long time.
That's true.
And as I understand it, you are part of Alice's origin story with getting into all things Amy Sherman-Palladino.
True that.
Oh my God. That went a... What a fuck... Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
What not, a not beautiful you. We credit. Are.
The guest isn't allowed.
You
the
just
hosts are allowed.
Bleep it every time I swear. Oh, that's such a big. That's I'm. That makes me feel so special.
It's true.
Didn't you get?
Well, you are special. Just regardless. And also, that was like a huge. Remember how I almost died? like I was super depressed. I had a really rough time. Oh. This is pre me getting sobes. Very open about my sobriety. At me.
Really pre podcast.
At me if you need advice. Pre podcast, pre everything. And I was like in the middle of this like endless breakup that kept happening. It happened like twice. That's and then with Georgia specifically, mm-hmm. not me and her breaking up, but like this guy and I kept breaking up. And Georgia was around for two of them.
And then I was like, enough of this.
Yeah. And then she just kind of like, let me go for a while. And I was in Tennessee and I was doing a gig and I had no feature. And so normally when I'm in a, I usually bring a feature and they didn't allow me to this time. So I was like by myself in the middle of Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I had nobody there to talk mm-hmm. to. And there was just like this really creepy hotel that I was staying at. And I'm like really scared to leave my room. And I had a conversation with my then boyfriend and he's just the worst guy. Like that, we'll just say that. He doesn't listen to any recorded media that he doesn't make himself, so it's fine to call him out. But
it was the weekend, wasn't it?
And he like said something. He like did something that really upset me, and then he hung up on me. And like he was supposed to be taking care of my cats, and I couldn't get a hold of him, and he wasn't taking care of my cats. And I was like, are they starving? I don't know where they are. And I called Georgia, and I was like on the verge of like fucking jumping out a window. I was like freaking out, and Georgia talked me down, and then she was like, go watch Gilmore Girls. And that's when I started watching Gilmore Girls that night. And
you had never watched it
my
before.
Life. Wow. Yes. It was so comforting. Okay.
Wow.
It was like drinking a hot apple cider, and it was exactly what I needed.
Oh, so good. I recently rewatched the like one that they just did, the
A Year in the Life.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I know lots of people don't like it, and I get that, but I love it. Mm.
I think Winter still holds up. The one where Emily and Lorelai are yelling at each other
ooh,
in the kitchen.
That is such a good one.
That shit's still good.
I even like the parts that are bad, though, where they are all like doing a like sing and dance number.
Across the universe?
Fat yeah. shaming at the pool. And
yeah, what? Anyways.
That's so weird.
I still, and I really hope they come back with a second one.
You're in the
you do
apologize.
Hope that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they left on such a, anyways, this show's not about this. Yeah.
I mean, it kind of is. It kind of isn't.
Yeah,
Alice, do you remember the episode that you first watched in Chattanooga, Tennessee? Oh, you started with the beginning.
Yeah.
A very good place to start.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great pilot. Yeah. Great. And I watched two episodes and then I fell asleep and I was okay. And I woke up and it was a new day and aww. My life changed.
Oh, how lovely.
So beautiful.
I think that show's meant that for a lot of people, yeah. like maybe mm-hmm. not necessarily, you know, obviously not specifically your situation, but that's like a little kind of lifeline or blanket.
Literally
and stuff.
So definitely. Many people were about to kill themselves.
In Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Some of them should have.
I mean, no, come on.
One time during college, it was like this time where we were studying a lot because there were exams. And we started watching, everyone's seen it, so I can talk about it.
Sure.
No spoiler. So we were watching it, and it was the episode, we were like staying up all night and stuff because we were studying. And then we watched the episode where Rory goes to see Jess in New York.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
then
yeah.
When she went back home, I started like hyperventilating and crying to the point where my friend was like, we're not allowed to watch Gilmore Girls until we're done exams anymore. Because I just was like, she's like, you are really having a hard time with this episode. And I'd seen that episode maybe 3 times already.
Sure.
Still. She forgets the CD and you're like, oh, man.
Who knows that years later, Jess would be brought down by a crock pot. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
No, I don't.
This Is Us?
Oh, I didn't see This Is Us.
No spoilers for This Is Us, but shouts out. Crockpot Twitter account's having a real field day with that one.
I know. Wow.
So Georgia is special because she is, and also she really gets affected by things when she watches them. Okay. Like, I get affected by things. Like, I can't watch a Disney movie without crying. But, like, Georgia is the only person that I know who watches The Bachelor and gets fully invested in the in the actual humanity of the characters involved, which is a real empathy, I think.
You see humanity in Ari.
Mm. I haven't watched the most recent Bachelor.
Yeah, the Ari is garbage.
That's fine. I honestly had to stop watching it because I was getting really invested in people that are not great.
The Rachel season left such a bad taste in my mouth.
It was really hard.
Really difficult to come
but
back.
Caitlyn
to that well,
season was awesome.
Sure,
but that was Caitlyn, the last Bachelor.
Those are the only ones I still follow. Like I love Caitlyn.
I love Caitlyn.
Yeah,
Caitlyn
Canadian.
Rules.
But overall, how did this season of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel strike you? Especially as a woman in comedy.
First of all, Alice told me to start watching it, so you paid it back.
It's a circle of life.
Yeah, that's true.
And you told me who it was by. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I just kind of thought it, I honestly thought like just the name of the show, I don't like the name of the show, and I thought it was going to be about like a housekeeper.
A like, magical housekeeper that teaches the children lessons through song.
I like, what's that movie with the umbrella and the
Mary
Poppins.
Mary Poppins.
Sure. Yeah. But anyway, I love it so much. And my boyfriend has caught a few episodes, and he's like, we've started living together, so I've really seen what parts of him I don't like. And
sure. You've seen all his Joel-ish parts.
Yeah.
And less Lenny parts.
And he, like, isn't super, he's kind of like, but Lenny Bruce was so important, and why is, like, this woman wasn't really part of it? And I'm just like, go suck your own dick. Like, I don't care. I'm not interested in any of your opinions ever.
Which I guarantee you is exactly what Amy would say if she was there. She would say, go suck your own dick.
That probably is what she'd say.
Yeah. You know what? It's not for you. So fuck off.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it.
Exactly. And it's such a good show. It's like the telling of the story, Lenny Bruce being incidental to it is like, I love how like baffled men are by that idea, who like see Lenny Bruce as this auteur and they're like, but Lenny Bruce is the main story. And it's like, but here he isn't. Yeah. And they're like, no, he is, though, in my head. Okay, but this wasn't made
that would be like,
by your head.
That would be like getting mad that JFK isn't the main character of Forrest Gump.
Exactly.
Wait, but he just said he had
that
to
pee. That is exactly what it's like.
You know what
Yeah, or like the other Boleyn girl. It's like, it should be about the main Boleyn girl.
No, but it's I feel the like other. It's like, if you have seen Inglourious Basterds and you're not upset,
yes.
Spoiler alert, and you're not upset that Hitler dies in that, then you can't be upset that this isn't about Lenny Bruce. It's artistic license.
Yeah.
Okay?
That's right.
They have imaginations. So.
Yeah.
Well, famously, Quentin Tarantino made Hitler get into a really gnarly car crash on that movie.
Okay,
and
all right.
His own stunts.
All right. What? I mean, I'm supporting your comedy.
Oh my gosh.
I'm supporting your comedy.
Oh.
You don't have to. Not all of it's good.
Yeah, that's
the reason. Podcast ratios, listen.
That's the reason.
There's
that I'm so hard on you, because I know you can do better. I'm your Susie.
Oh, okay. That's a nice supportive role.
You are not tired and you are not weak.
Oh, I feel both right now.
Yeah, me too.
This episode is episode 7. Put that on your plate. Written and directed by, if you had to guess, do you know? Alice?
Daniel Sherman Palladino.
Daniel Palladino.
Oh, she let him? She let him
She
do
let
it?
Him out of his cage?
Yeah, his kennel.
She let him out of the sex dungeon downstairs and said, go do one. I don't give a shit. And the Amazon synopsis is, with Susie's help, Midge hones her act at the Gaslight. Abe surprises the women with a dinner guest, sending Rose into an emotional spiral. Working towards a promotion, Joel conjures up a new plan. Midge stirs up controversy after meeting a big-time comedian. A lot of plot in this episode, right?
Can I say, like,
yes.
I think this is my favorite episode of
really?
All of them.
Really?
Yeah, because I was like, oh, you don't feel
I don't
this?
Agree.
Okay. I don't agree either, but
really?
That's okay.
I don't think it's your favorite.
No, I agree with
it
that.
It actually is mine, but I don't think it's mine. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's all I have to say is it is mine.
What we like to do is go through the episode.
And? I want to see how you put it.
Take every pop culture reference and string it together in a supercut for segment that we call
12 o'clock rock, we're gonna
pop
around
the culture
tonight.
We're gonna pop around the culture tonight.
We're gonna pop around the culture tonight. This is episode 7. Put that on your plate.
Elizabeth Taylor. I wanted to say to him, I hope she's out shopping for something that makes you look like Rock Hudson.
That was Cole Porter's. He wrote Begin the Begin on that very instrument.
It's like a
Jewish Dorian Gray.
Like a Doris Day picture.
She's like a pole vaulter from Triumph of the Will.
Set up a line like Henry Ford.
Yeah, even Freud is like, you know what, I'm gonna pass on that one.
Bob Hope doesn't have a character. Lenny Bruce doesn't have a character.
Yes, I want it to be the next Lorette Taylor.
If she'd been around during the Russian Revolution, the Bolsheviks would have told the Romanovs, never mind.
Who pay for the Modiglianis.
People think they hear Sophia Loren.
I paid for Walter Winchell's summer home, for Christ's sake.
As the world turns. Puccini.
It was Aaron Copland.
Wait, Aaron Copland wrote your doorbell?
It's something he does. Aaron writes doorbells for all his friends.
I wish you would have said, it's the band Copland.
I laughed out loud on the second rewatch with the... he looked like a pole vulture from Triumph of the Will.
That was a very good line. That's
so
very, very
good.
Funny.
Triumph of the Will is the movie that Hitler's people made. Like a propaganda movie.
Here's the historian's corner on
Google. This is a
historian. On Maisel Goss.
Checking in with historians, I think.
No, Triumph of the Will is like a propaganda movie. Triumph of the Will is a 1935 German propaganda film. Yes. Directed, produced, edited, and co-written by Leni Riefenstahl.
Amy Sherman-Palladino. What? Oh my God.
Yeah, it's Nazi propaganda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywho's, I love all the Holocaust jokes.
It's a good Nazi joke.
The weird thing about me loving her like shows is that I actually know no pop culture references, and for some reason, I still really like Amy's work.
Yeah, yeah.
You still get it. It's still musical, and it tracks for you. Yeah. Did you guys, as stand-ups, did you guys like the whole bit montage at the beginning that
I
opens?
I loved it. I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
That I loved. Yeah. Well, that part was great.
It's a really interesting notion of, like, as a writer of a TV show, to have to write three consecutive jokes in a row that are, like, all kind of funny.
Yeah.
But they build and you see the process of that. I thought that was one of the more... Again, I love the process of stand-up on this show, and I felt like that was one of the more fun ways to show it.
Absolutely. I thought the first one was funny, and then the third one, I was like, oh, I gotta go write some jokes. I gotta get back to writing.
No, and I know, and I felt like this is why this show is so special to me, is that, like, we've seen things like, what's that Judd Apatow movie about stand-up?
All
funny
of them?
Like,
this is 40.
This is 40.
Or no, it is funny people. This is 40 minutes too long.
Funny People, like, was all about stand-ups and stand-ups doing their thing and everything, and, like, didn't cover any of this stuff that they're covering in Maisel. So, like, I love this show because even great stand-up movies and stand-up shows don't cover this process. And it's so interesting because it's not exactly like what it's like to write and hone a joke, but it's like a pretty close proximity of, like, how some people's, you know, maybe this is Midge's process, because the process normally isn't write a punchline that's different for every premise.
Mm-hmm.
Like for every, right. like you but, come up with a premise and then you do a radically different take on it is not really the process.
I felt like though she like would add on, she would like sometimes say the same punchline, mm-hmm. but then have like more
that's true.
To it. And that's so what it's like.
That is so what it's like.
Like you start with like, almost a half joke usually. Yeah,
that's
and then
true.
Hopefully it goes to some minutes. There's
like,
a dog as well.
There is.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like the thing about her parents having sex.
I didn't do something cute. Georgia just saw a dog.
Like the thing about her parents having sex. That is the closest to what writing a stand-up joke is like. You write a joke and then you come up with the take. Like she has the take is that like she heard this scraping all her life and she thought it was a ghost and it was actually something worse, her parents having sex. So that's her take.
Sure.
But then she came up with the real punchline, which is the impression of a ghost, which is like
which is almost probably totally invented.
She literally was like, well, if this, then what? Like you can see that exactly she did that process mm-hmm. and
she
got there.
She exploded it out.
And I was watching and I was like, yes, and that and what?
yeah,
is what?
And it was so fun, like to show a writer writing in a movie, mm-hmm. for some reason, my first image is always Ewan McGregor in Moulin Rouge, like at the typewriter.
Yeah.
Like it always just kind of looks dumb, where he's like crumpling up paper. No, that's not it.
Yeah.
But to actually see a stand-up in this montage, like,
on
oh, okay,
yeah.
oh, yeah, and like observing things, but then at the gaslight, like, oh, those didn't get quite the laughs I wanted. Okay, I'm going to revise. Like it was such a beautiful way mm-hmm. to show it that I really haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah.
Also, like, you can almost never go wrong with a montage.
Almost, it's like, I think that's right.
It's really good. Yeah, it's true. It's
like
really hard to fuck
it was
that
what I wanted.
Yeah, it's true.
That was the problem with Marin. didn't have enough montages.
That was the issue, I think.
That was the only issue.
And now he's on Glow, which is almost all montages.
Is that true?
No, I've never seen it. I'll be on season 2.
You're on season 2.
Are you? Yeah. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Are you really?
Season 2, yeah.
That's so exciting. I love the show.
I'm in like 1/15th of
an episode. That's my favorite part of the show.
But I thought that was a great montage, and then it went into one of the worst scenes in the whole
show. Are we talking about Susie and her at the diner?
And this is why I realized
that it's a Daniel episode. Yep.
This I don't like.
Really good.
Oh, gee, thanks.
No, Miriam, I mean, you look good.
I like it. Okay.
Do not make me cry at the stage, Deli.
I don't want you to fucking cry.
You're starting to cry.
I'm not starting to cry.
You are too starting to cry, and that's going to make me cry.
Shit, there's like water on my face.
So is our teeth.
This is so...
You an alien?
Yeah.
I don't understand why you don't like that.
So,
because it's not Susie. Like, Susie wouldn't do this.
She wouldn't be like, oh, and be like, what is this watery substance that's almost like a, it's like a Third Rock from the Sun joke. Like, why are we crying? Like, that she's an alien or something. I like her sincerity just saying, like, you're really good.
But yeah,
I feel
me
like,
too.
But I feel like she would realize and then be like, well, anyway, so we have to work on blah, blah,
and
blah,
more,
blah, blah.
Maybe Midge would cry a little bit and be like, all right, calm down.
Yeah, but you guys... We don't know what it's like to be a woman in that time.
Disagree. I know. I've lived centuries
of
time. And
this is where we buried the lead until now. Kevin, actually.
You should have saved this for the next episode.
No, I think that's a good point that we don't know what it's like.
Can you imagine, like, you're this woman who I think might want to be a man. I don't know, maybe not, but you know, maybe...
Or is maybe attracted to women.
Yeah,
or,
like something that's like probably not super popular at that time. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, just becoming powerful enough, you found this other woman who's amazing, and you're like, I just think I would get excited like that. And then I totally think Susie would be like trying to make some dumb joke about her tears.
If you see the tears thing as a joke that Susie's making, not that she's actually doesn't know what the water on her face is. You know what I mean? Like in the, like that's how I kind of excuse it.
But the problem for me was that it felt like a joke not specific to Midge and Susie. It just felt like you could plug in any two sitcom characters from the 90s. Like, oh, and then they start crying at a deli and they don't want to. And all the lines kind of felt like that. Like that's... they could be ciphers for anybody. Which is why they always feel like more sitcom-y conventions when he does
which
this
stuff.
Daniel. Which is like, what do women do? They cry together, I guess. And
I mean, yeah.
But also,
you two start
cry alone.
Cry alone and cry together. Our literal story.
Yeah, I don't
want to
limit it.
And then she told a story about her crying. So
it's true.
That is what happened.
But no, I see. You know what? Also, it's like I'm not that meticulous about TV shows. I usually like a lot of things that people think are like that's so stupid. I like don't see.
Like, what's a good example of that?
Like, literally what you guys were talking about, I never would have picked that scene out as being bad. I would have been like, cool, they're talking.
Well, here's what we do on Nasal Goys. We take a show, we take something that's fun, and then we just put it through the meat grinder of process.
We don't put it through the meat grinder. It's just that we have a lot of TV writers on this show.
Like me.
You know, yes, but you're more of a stand-up and a performer and an actor now because you're taking a class.
I'm taking a class.
Generally, these people who we have tend to be very critical and like they're picking apart the scenes as in like how I would do it. And I wanted to have Georgie on because she also is like somebody who just really appreciates, you know what I mean? Like the whole, like you're really good at zooming out and just seeing the like emotional impact of something.
I'm
and, like,
almost exclusively zoomed out.
Zoomed out.
You live life with a prime lens of like
she's
12
not a
millimeter.
Great driver. No.
Guys.
Nice.
200 people RSVP, 200 people show. This is a big day.
It's a hell of a day.
Watch your mouth.
And a great leap forward for the family.
Okay. Well, by the way, Georgia, you like Joel? You out on Joel?
I'm not out on Joel. I don't want them to be together, but I also, if they got together and back together and he was like super cool, I'd be okay with it. Mm-hmm. He's just like, she's so much better than him, but I don't hate him. He's just a guy, like they suck.
I don't hate him either. I've never hated him, but I have no reason to root for him.
See, a lot of the people we had on the show who are women are very pro Joel, and they think Joel's a hottie, and I'm speaking
not
for
kidding.
Me. Not Carrie.
My
that's
one
true.
Ally.
That's true. Your one ally. And you maybe are on that.
Yeah, Joel, I wouldn't.
Really?
He's not hot. He's not hot to me.
Wow.
He's squirrely.
He's a squirrel.
He really is.
What do you mean squirrely?
Like, he looks like he's playing with like nuts, but he's not his nuts, but you know what I mean?
Hiding
like,
walnuts all the time. Yeah.
He does look like he's hiding walnuts, and he kind of is like...
He's so cool and calm and collected.
What? He is cool and calm and collected, which is why I like him, but he's also like an insane... He's also like so vulnerable
emotional
to masculine
squirrel.
Like...
Yeah.
Like insecurities, you know what I mean? It's like you bomb on stage, so you leave your wife.
Yeah,
cool, dude.
But this was my justification, which is alongside your justification for the Susie crying, is that we don't know what it's like to be a man in that time period. Like there is no blueprint. I always say this for being a man who's constantly being upstaged by your wife. There's no blueprint on how to be a supportive partner in that like archetype, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like there's no, he didn't grow up with any like female role models that are just like straight up better than their husbands, and then the husband's just there being like, yeah,
he didn't grow
it.
Up reading Matt McGorry's tweets to know how to be an ally to women.
It's true. What if he did? I see him struggling with that, mm-hmm. like more than I see him just being like, fuck this, I'm supposed to be the breadwinner, you know? I feel like he's like, I kind of no, I should be better than this, but right. I'm not.
Well, that's, I see the struggle too, but that's why I'm like, he so succumbs to like, mm-hmm. I feel like being insecure about your masculinity really comes out in really obnoxious ways. And
same,
that's what
I
happens.
Agree.
Yeah.
I agree with whatever you said.
Okay.
Whatever it is,
no,
I
we,
agree.
We get it.
I agree.
But you're interrupting with your agreement in a way, so.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What about Lenny?
I couldn't want to fuck Lenny more if I put my life depended on it.
Okay.
I like think he's so, first of all, like I've heard of Lenny Bruce, obviously, but I literally have never watched his comedy. And then Hampton made me watch some after he watched a bit of Lenny Bruce on the show.
Ugh.
But I know. Such it's a, like I get it. Lenny Bruce.
Yeah, you love him.
You're the reason he's the reason you exist. but the guy who plays him in the show and him in the show, like I just, first of all, he's my type. Dark hair, tall, stand up.
Oh, yeah, Kirby. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just love them so much. Like, I would love them to be together.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Very Team
two.
Lenny.
Season two.
Where are you?
Season two.
I guess the listeners know.
I don't know. I mean, I'm pro Joel. I feel like
you
very
are?
Attached to Joel. I want Joel to overcome his ego. I
you
want
have
Joel
so
to
much
figure
compassion.
It out. But I also get the appeal of Lenny. Lenny is incredibly. I just feel like Lenny's always going to be existing for his own stand-up, and he's not going to be like Lenny has to be the stand-up in the relationship. I think that's okay, but I think Joel could be a supportive partner to the star.
I think you're right, but I think sometimes it, especially for like a new comic like Miss Maisel or Amanda Gleason, whatever we're calling her,
Amanda
she
Gleason.
It might be really helpful for her to be in a relationship with somebody who's also all about their stand-up so she can be all about her thing.
Ideally, here's the situation. She,
here we go.
She shacks up with Lenny for like 6 months, gets, you know, the feel of the
material,
situation.
Lets him write for her.
She steals his mojo, right? And then she breaks up with him because it's obviously never going to work in the long term. Goes back to Joel.
Also, Lenny Bruce is married in the movie. Like, I know that doesn't stop anybody. But
no, that doesn't stop anybody.
But in
not
like
in
the first, second... Beginning of the second episode.
Yeah, she has a wife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt that was...
I think also historically, like, him and his wife were pretty chill with each other, like, into each other. Mm. So I don't know if you'd want to, like... I know you have artistic license, but I don't know if you'd want to break up.
I like the phrase, historically, they're pretty chill with each other.
Historically speaking. Georgia's History Corner.
So that flashback with Joel where we see Kevin Pollak, Mr. Maisel, and it's right after the... By the way, that little kid who played Joel... Not so great.
Really?
I
thought
like
he looked
him.
Exactly like Joel, though.
I thought he looked like him, but...
It's hard to get that.
I was like, I didn't believe that kid for a second.
Yeah, he was really... he was sort of, like, catatonic.
I kind of didn't understand the purpose of that scene other than, like, see, this is what Joel had to go through as a young boy. This is the pressure he had.
Yeah.
But I didn't really see
but it's
purpose.
Sort of, okay, but here's my defense of
sure.
it. It's what Joel is thinking about.
Okay.
It's not a flashback that we need to see as the audience. It's what Joel thinks about.
Yeah, because it does cut to him just like lying in bed looking at the stars.
It might not matter at all, but it's Joel's, you know.
It's like what he also is remembering from being in that room again. It's like that's how being in that room is making him feel.
Right.
But I also, I'm so zoomed out that I really didn't get the point. I was like, what are they showing that they, like, I don't know. I was like, I don't know what this flashback is for. Yeah. I don't know what it's saying.
It was testing the limits of audience goodwill towards wig believability with yeah, Kevin
that's
Pollak.
That's the other thing. The wig threw me off so much that I didn't realize which dad that
that's
was
funny.
For a second.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Like, and I just rewatched the episode and that happened again.
Again? The
second time. I was like, oh, no, yeah, this is Joel. Because I kept thinking yeah. it was like the other dad talking to
the older
son,
brother.
The older brother. Like, it took me a minute.
So Joel moves back in with his parents. Him and Penny broke up. We don't know.
I guess.
We don't see it. We don't know who left who.
Don't you feel like we saw it?
But he's back at home.
Well, when he was in the cab, right?
We see him being unhappy. So you think he left her and then just moved back in with mom and dad?
Yeah, I feel like he was like, I'm not going to come in. And then he just like ghosted her and almost like never went back. That was yeah. what I interpreted
oh,
as happening.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Like, I just think Joel is great and all, but he's totally a weenus who would do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. I didn't think about the way he treated Penny.
It's the first time someone used the word weenus on this podcast.
It's true.
And I celebrate it.
Is
no,
there
I
a
applaud
little
it.
Soundbite we can use to like commemorate it?
Weenus. Bing.
Great, that's perfect.
Oh my God, can I have that for my cell phone ringtone?
Yeah, I'll isolate and send you the clip.
Specifically when you call me is when I want that.
Sure.
That's awesome.
And I'll call you just so you can hear it.
You're
all
the
right.
best.
So Joel,
this is amazing.
Joel's back at home.
Let's all go to the Grove.
And again, more Daniel-y stuff where it's like, we're...
yes. So Daniel.
His mom.
So Daniel.
Coming in like, where's your poo-poo pants?
It's
and
so
where's your,
Daniel-y.
Where's your porn magazines? What's like, ba-ba-bee-boo-boo-boo-boo.
Give me everything you got. All your poo-poo undies.
What's another episode that Daniel did so I can have... I didn't know we were going to be talking about him so much.
I mean, this is a show... Well, I feel like it's worth talking about because I feel like...
Deep, it is.
Deep down, this is a show about Amy and Daniel. I
oh
feel like
my
this might be
God.
The arc of it.
You just blew my fucking mind.
Season...
First of all, didn't know there was a Daniel. anyways, am I too loud?
But
no,
no
you
that was me. So, the other episode was when Susie was nervous around Lenny Bruce.
And remember, Rose and everybody.
That wasn't one of my faves.
Yeah.
Yes. And also Rose got in her head and was like throwing her off. And so that was a Daniel episode where we took issue with the way that Daniel was writing Susie, where it's just like, who is this person who's like this hard ass, but all of a sudden is like undone by Lenny Bruce?
He also wrote Doink, which Herb Smith, while Sean gives her the crappy
I
jokes.
Doink was like my least favorite episode.
There was a few episodes in the middle that I enjoyed because the show's so good, but were very frustrating.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's why I think I like this one so much, because I feel like it's the first one after that frustrating period.
Oh, okay.
And you're like, she's killing.
Do you feel like this show should have been 6 episodes, 10 episodes, or it's just right at 8 episodes for a season?
I think it could have been 9, but it's pretty fine.
Yeah.
I feel like so much shit happens in this episode. I'm like,
a lot happens in this episode.
You could do 9,
you could do
I
9.
Think.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like build up the Sophie thing or...
Build up the Sophie thing more and have a little bit more time in between. Yeah, the mom thing happening. It's just like the, we haven't really gotten to this part yet, but the Sophie...
Her
Maisel's reaction to the Sophie thing and what she does afterwards is very unbelievable to me and really like ruins the whole episode
yeah.
for me.
Really.
By yes. the way, some people might be Team Lenny, some people might be Team Joel. I'm Team Dodie.
Young lady, I heard through the door that your name is not Dodie. What is your name?
Imogene.
I'm not going to remember that.
What is, I know that, here's the thing, I watch this show religiously, but I'm really bad with names. What's
sure.
the dad's name?
Tony Shalhoub, Abe Weissman.
Abe Weissman. He's my favorite character.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
He's so great. He's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And he's a strong man. He's the man she should be dating, but it's her
okay.
dad.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Again, this would be, that's more like a Woody Allen
it's
take
a,
on Marvel.
Tony Shalhoub is a get, because I heard it was Scott Patterson was going to play him originally.
Scott Patterson was going to yeah. play Tony Shalhoub's part, but then last minute...
Yeah.
Monk bust in. He's like, I'm here. I'll do it.
I was saying that I feel like that character of the mom has to be handled perfectly. You can't just toss her in as a goofy.
You're talking about Joel's mom.
Joel's mom.
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
Like, she has to be playing off another mom or like I feel like the scenes I've seen her in before, she is very over the top. But like.
But grounded in relationship.
Grounded in relationship and. Also, when she's fixating on something specific, and she has a point of view, But this scene, she literally doesn't have any point of view. She just comes in to say stupid shit. Yeah. Like, what human being would go from morning time, eggs time, so glad to have you home, porn,
poopy,
you know,
diaper.
Poopy dipe dipes? Yeah. Like, what is that person?
That's
She's
why I didn't.
One of my least favorite characters,
yeah,
probably.
Because it's really hard to make her funny, I think. But, like, you could. Dan thinks just, I think that Dan thinks that funny voices are funny. And
I think that.
He's like a child.
He's like.
Dan loves peekaboo. He doesn't have object permanence down yet. And that's why his jokes
down.
Suffer. What were you going to say, Gigi?
Oh, nothing. It was a joke, and it won't work now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Damn it.
We try not to
so
steamroll our guests on the
I'm
Musical Girls podcast.
I'm sorry.
We still do. Okay.
That's right. You're the Canadian here. You say sorry to us.
How much can I rely
say
on that
story.
Horrid joke?
I mean, and then Joel goes to Abe. He says, here's the deal. I might get a promotion because he said something kind of not stupid in a meeting about business, the products. I don't understand. I don't care.
I had to, when I was watching that and he said something, I had to like look on the wall to remember what they sell, which is plastics.
Yeah, like, very gradual.
Well, I mean, it's semi-believable. Like he this is in a time when conglomerates are not a thing.
Sure.
He is proposing that this company basically become a conglomerate, and no one at the company besides him has ever thought of that. Like, controlling the means of production themselves is like a revolutionary idea.
So Joel started that.
It's badly written from the perspective of like, wait, no one in this company has thought about it? Like, that's crazy. Like, it's crazy that Joel's like, hey, why don't we try to do this? And they're like,
well, also the other guys are like, stupid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the boss is like, I read about conglomerates in a magazine.
Exactly.
They say they're going to be all the rage. And
exactly.
it feels odd because it doesn't feel like a novelty because it's a business model. It's not like someone saying, I hear hula hoops are going to be in. It's like, no, this is how production should work.
Yeah,
it feels odd.
That being said, as a zoomed out person, I was like, go, Joel. You're doing it.
True.
You're killing it.
It was cute, then the secretary was proud.
It was worth it for Mrs. Moskowitz mouthing, I'm so proud of you.
And I love that he's like, even though he can't sleep with Mrs. Moskowitz.
He could.
Sorry.
Joel
even though he's
with
not sleeping with
Mrs.
her.
Mrs. Moskowitz is a freak.
So sorry, of course, that he is a freak. She's a freak. They're all freaks. I just mean, like, it's really cool that they found common ground even though they're not sleeping together, which is new for him.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Appreciating a woman that he's not fucking.
Yeah.
Maybe Mrs. Moskowitz is his most corrective female relationship.
Ooh,
it's the
point.
Rebuttal to the classic guys and girls can't be friends from When Harry Met Sally.
It is it's a classic rebuttal from Daniel Palladino.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
So he does that, and then he goes to Abe and says, listen, I'm getting a promotion. Here's the financial plan. Here's what I'm going to do with the kids, blah, 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 blah.
Joel, you know that I am pretty good at math.
Bragging.
Right?
Yes.
Humble
There's
brag.
Nothing left for you.
I'll be fine.
You'll be fine?
The new job takes me to the West Coast a lot. Eventually, I'll be moving there.
To California? Miriam said you hate California.
Doesn't matter.
But what about the kids?
They're taken care of. Anything they want.
But you won't see them.
They don't need me.
Joel.
So do me a favor.
He reaches for his hand.
Be the go-between on this. Tell Miz that she and the kids are all set. You'll do that?
I'll do that.
This is good, Abe.
You should be happy.
Okay.
I love that there. He's like, there's no money for you. And he's like, it's okay, I'll be in California. Like, it's free right. to live here.
No problem. And he's who started the tent city.
Oh, yeah, Joel started the tent city.
I got a tip from my friend in season two. That's what happened.
Gotta stop spoiling it for us.
He starts, yeah, Skid Row is Joel's invention.
Joel's in one of those trailers parked on Hillhurst,
like,
or something.
It's like, it's California, yay, I don't need anything. Yeah, that's a really weird part of it. Like, see, oh, I'm such a martyr.
Like, yeah, just, it doesn't make me like him. It just makes me think you're stupid. You don't know what anyone yeah, wants or needs from you.
Premature. I'm like, I don't think you got the job yet. Like, yeah. I don't think you don't have the money. It's like everyone knows once you, he's young, I guess, yeah. because it's like if you are auditioning for something, mm-hmm. don't tell your parents you're auditioning because then right. you have to be like, I didn't get it.
Yeah, yeah. exactly.
Is the mic too close to my face?
No.
Okay. No, you good. That's okay. exactly perfect. Where it's it needs really to
good,
be.
I was just thinking when you were talking, it's a really good distance.
Great.
There's so much wrong with his calculations, like in terms of like, if he was serious about this, he would plot out what he needs to survive for himself. He wouldn't bring something with no money for himself to his father-in-law. Like, why would his father-in-law, like, believe him?
So to me, and because it's not real yet and because there's no money for mm-hmm. him, it's more, to me, it just more feels like a symbol of Joel saying, like, see, look how much I'm suffering, Abe. Yeah. I'm trying.
Which is gross.
Yeah.
It's really gross.
Come to our side, Alice. Come to our anti-Joel side.
I'm not anti-Joel. I won't be anti-Joel. I know because they're going to totally redeem him next season.
Oh, I was thinking when we were in the bathroom, not together, when I was in there after you, that
in there together, tell them
that I really wasn't expecting you to be on Joel's side.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it makes sense looking at your dating history now.
Yeah, no, it's true. But it's completely true.
But
you've
yeah.
dated a Joel or two.
Mm-hmm. Well, have I ever? I've dated way worse than Joel. I've dated a Herb Schmidt.
You've dated a Herb Schmidt?
Yeah, I feel like people I've dated are like, wah.
That's inconceivable to me.
And we're not talking about Sean Perlman, who's great. A prince among men.
I didn't think we were talking about Sean Perlman. He's giving me a lot of shouts out on this podcast.
I feel like we've talked about it before, and I didn't want to make him feel like I was talking about him.
Oh, he listened?
Nope. So.
Let's talk about Sophie Lennon, another stand-up.
God bless.
God bless.
From Queens, born and raised.
Did she say some tweets?
Place you go to get to
yeah,
the
I love
airport,
some tweets.
To get the hell out of Queens. What's that out here for? In Queens, we got a neighborhood called Flushing, which isn't a name so much as a suggestion for what to do with the place.
Oh, you laughed.
I laughed real.
Did it accidentally pause?
No,
oh, no,
it's end.
Okay, I thought you laughed so hard that you laughed.
I paused the tape.
And then you paused the tape.
You laughed so hard the iPod came out of its socket.
It's sentient. It knows to wait for
whoa,
laughter.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I must be polite here. I can't overlap. So Sophie Lennon, as played by the great Jane Lynch, making her first Paladino performance appearance since Season one of Gilmore Girls, when she was the nurse at the hospital when Richard Gilmore had the heart attack.
God bless.
God bless.
Yeah.
What a fun choice to have another female comedian.
I think we're going to talk about Sophie for the rest of the podcast.
Let's make a prediction. We might go back to other things, but like, goddamn. I have so much to say about this.
So,
number one, I agree with Georgia. Really good choice to have a female stand-up that is popular. And, of course, it would be sort of a
mini Pearl type.
A mini Pearl type.
Mabley or
a vaudevillian performer that has this reputation, of course.
So to frame it contextually.
Of course, we can't use a black woman because even though that's historically accurate.
I know. Imagine if they did
Amy
like
Sherman Valley.
Queen Latifah was like a mom's Mabley type.
It would be, you have to use people who were in Gilmore Girls, so they're kind of limited.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, they made a rule for themselves.
Originally, it was going to be Scott Patterson.
Originally, Scott Patterson was going to be Sophie Lennon.
Yeah.
Put that on your plate. He's probably already said that.
Put that on your plate.
So Susie and Midge, like, okay, you got to go out. Not tour, but you're going to open for Sophie. It's going to be a shitty gig. So she goes to David Paymer's character, whose name I'm forgetting right now, the agent guy, the one with all the power, who I like, who I think is like an upright, upstanding guy, even if he's like a little uptight.
Yeah, he's not like a typical manager that we know who are garbage. He's pretty great.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
So I love my manager.
So he's doing a solid. And he's like, okay, well, come see Sophie, blah, blah, blah. and they come see her. They meet her. The thing about them watching the performance from minute one, I'm like, we saw them watching a bunch of different kind of comedians and performances. Yeah. And they do have a they have taste, right?
Yeah.
So you've seen them like, oh, they love the puppet guy where he pretended mm-hmm. his puppet was dead.
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't love the big guy who was
the
like
the club act.
But they had respect for him. But this, they're just like eating it up with a spoon.
Do you think they got caught up in the moment?
Maybe because she's so big and because yeah. like
so
they
many
grew
people
up
are
with
laughing.
Her. Yeah.
So to Rachel Brosnahan because she has this. She has this like reaction watching it that's sort of like, ooh, that stunk, you know, like the jokes are so bad they're good is what the whole yeah. idea of vaudeville stuff kind of is, you know.
I'm like, so fat, how fat
which really
you?
Frustrates me that they didn't use Moms Mabley because like her jokes are still good. Like, have you listened to Moms like recordings?
No, now? I haven't. No, I wanted to before
good.
Recording this.
It's like the same as Joan Rivers. Like, the shit yeah. holds up.
But
it's
Moms
crazy.
Was that was a character, though, right?
It was.
Where Joan Rivers was more herself.
Joan Rivers was more herself.
Yeah.
But, like, this stuff was all fictional.
Yeah.
Like, that style of joke writing. Mm-hmm. But they... the jokes are still good. So, like, yeah. But, like, on this show in general, they don't write killer stand-up. For the performers.
It's nothing like Pete sets on Crashing or something like that.
Yeah. Are they better than in real life?
I don't know. I haven't watched it.
Because
that
that's the only way they could be good.
Right.
Ooh, fun. We're having fun.
Yeah. I exist.
I like the stand-up on this show. I like her stand-up. Not the one we're talking about right now.
Rachel.
Midges.
Miss Maisel.
Yes.
I think she's so funny.
Really?
My boyfriend, the only person I guess I talked to, was like, oh, it sounds like writers are writing stand-up. But mm-hmm. I thought
well,
it was
they did.
They are. So he's correct.
I mean, I would.
No, not his opinion is correct, but like that is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think in context it works. Like, I think she's clearly funny in this world. You know, I don't think they're like writing poorly mm-hmm. for her. I just think like it's not if I saw her act on stage, I wouldn't be like, I'd have to be a person in 1956, you know what
sure
I mean?
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
She meets Sophie backstage. The manager David Paymer introduces her to her. They keep using the name Amanda Gleason, which is a pretty actually an elegant plot device because mm-hmm. it'll be helpful going forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sophie's like, no, I hug, come over, I'm gonna blah 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 blah. Sophie, really nice.
Yeah.
Taking Midge under her wing and being
yeah.
kind of like
pretty exciting.
A mentor-mentee thing, which I'm sure isn't common from just meeting a person backstage. Like, come over to my house.
Especially between female comics. We all hate each other.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are just catfights 24/7, right?
It's hard to work.
Okay.
Yeah, we have to be. When Georgie and I tour together, we have to be in separate rooms because we'll just fight each other.
Separate planes?
We'll try to poison each other before bed.
Separate
planes? Yeah.
They're flying parallel to each other.
It's actually quite costly. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's worth it.
It's worth it.
It's worth it.
So Midge goes over. And Sophie Lennon, oh, she's not this hard-boiled lady from Queens. She's a proper kind of British lady. She's like she's an upper-class lady
less
of wealth.
Queens and more of a queen.
Yes, Queens.
Put that on your plate.
Put that.
Wow.
Georgie, I think you should start saying put that on your plate
please
in your
do.
Act.
Please do.
The problem is I have been for years and they didn't give me any credit.
So when you saw this is triggering. Like, they stole from me.
Yeah.
They
and tweeted that's it why out. I think the stand-up's so good. It's like literally my jokes.
So here's the issue. Here's my first issue. Should have reversed it.
What do you mean?
So the idea that a lady like this who would, with no irony, say Macron and Sherrod, I don't think... If you lack that self-awareness, I don't think you'd be able to do Sophie Lennon from Queens.
Right.
Because you're so up in your own head that you wouldn't have like
the
perceptiveness
to
be able to like, oh yeah, this is a character I do. What would have been more interesting is if she did a lady that seemed put together or yes. talked about her husband and kids and yes. she was like an image of like what a woman should be in the 50s. And then she met her and she's like, nah, I'm just bullshitting. I'm just from yeah. Queens, blah, blah, blah. Because you could see someone from Queens being able to slip, kind of like the way Maria Bamford can slip into that,
right.
that voice where she's like, yes, I can blah, blah, blah.
You're yeah. not wrong in that that might be a funnier choice in a way, but like, oh, fuck, I forgot what I was going to say. It wouldn't have worked because the whole point of Sophie was to be like, you can't be sexy on stage. You can't be like,
right.
you have to
make yourself into a ball of grossness.
Yeah, like you need a character. You need to cover up that hole or like something. I think she literally said that. Cover so like,
oh, she
if she was
that.
Like an elegant woman on stage, that would be counterintuitive to her point of
Bob
view.
Hope doesn't have a character. Lenny Bruce doesn't have a character.
They have dicks. Do you have a dick?
Not last time I checked.
Darling, look at you. I mean, really. Men don't want to laugh at you. They want to fuck you. You can't go up there and be a woman. You've got to be a thing. You want to get ahead in comedy? Cover up that hole.
The advice from her perspective as a comedian. So she grew up, 20 years? Like her... Mm-hmm.
Through the depression yeah. that she got people through.
Yeah, probably not wrong for her.
She's probably 60 or 50-something.
Yeah, it's just...
This. And she's that's not malicious advice either.
Yeah.
It's just genuine.
It was too much. The character was way too big.
It was an SNL character.
It was an SNL character. And the problem with that is, of course they went in that direction because Jane Lynch is so fucking funny and so good. It's
at
too
anything.
Much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's too good. It's too good when she's doing the character of like this woman. I'm sorry. Now I just want to watch this all day long. Like her being this character.
The funny thing is like Sophie Lennon as Sophie Lennon,
mm-hmm.
or wait, as like the true woman. It would be so funny on stage. You're not wrong. Like that is so funny.
Yeah.
I realize the reason why this is my favorite episode is because of their interaction. Because I feel like when I started stand-up, I was told so many things along this line. Like, you can't be too pretty. One teacher, I started stand-up by taking a stand-up class, and she was like, her advice was like, the audience has to want to go home with you. Which is, in hindsight, when I started doing stand-up, I always wore heels and a tiny dress.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Yeah, like, it's crazy. And it took me and I started with a character, even, like, more or less. Like, I was always like, fuck you. Like,
so that was your Sophie Lennon.
And then you famously, after you took that class, went on stage and said, I took a class and this person said this thing. And then you completely said her by name and then sold out her company.
Whoa.
Right? That's the thing you do.
Because
that's what people do.
This is
insane.
Yeah, this almost...
It made me so mad.
Yeah. And again, like the whole setup, I know there's like different ways you could have done it where it's like, maybe the rich person was the stage person and the poor person, or just like, but the idea behind Midge's anger and vitriol, because all the while this is happening, there's another plot of like Rose wasn't told that Joel said he wanted to come back and Midge said no and she
Which
gets
is
upset.
Fucked up.
And then she yells about it
at church, as a whole thing.
At the synagogue.
And Midge feels guilty.
You know, can I back it up for 1 second? You know what really blew my mind about this episode? I always think Midge is like dressed so amazing and like rich looking, and then for like Sophie to be like, you need a different jacket. I was like, but she already looks rich as fuck.
Yeah, she looks good all the time. Nice. She is rich, too.
Yeah, so that was kind of crazy.
Even...
You would think Game would recognize Game.
I
did laugh at her saying, the kitchen.
Let's back
Why?
Up a little bit to not just Midge undermining her on stage, but Midge undermining her in person.
Yeah.
This really bothered me. I thought it was like the whole Midge being presumptuous and spoiled was like blown out to this like exponential size in this scene with
Sophie?
Because she was in her house and she was questioning everything. And she was, first of all, so surprised that she was rich, which is like, okay, this person has been performing for 20 years and has sold records and like revolutionized radio, and you don't believe that she's rich? That's really weird.
I wasn't even surprised, and I'm surprised a lot.
Like, why would you walk into somebody's house and be like, oh, this is palatial? It's like, yeah, she's a superstar. She's like this huge celebrity.
It'd be like being shocked that Jerry Seinfeld owns a mansion.
Insane.
Yeah.
That she would not understand that.
Be like, Jerry, you don't live in that little apartment.
brilliant.
And then the fact that she's shaming her for having a butler and having a tea service and all this stuff, it's like she's acting like the woman is gauche for having these things and so judgmental. And it made me so angry because it's like, hey, you look up to this person 5 seconds ago, and now that you're surprised that she has this other persona that she chooses to live in, it's like, you're like, oh, gross. And it's like, what are you talking about? She's yeah. She can live however she wants to. She's revolutionized radio. You said it one scene ago.
Yeah, and she's going to let you open for
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I know. You should
I
be
would
like, wow,
never make
cool.
fun of the way Alice lives, ever, even though she, I can't even believe it. It's
I've never made fun
gross.
Of Alice once doing this podcast. I would never do that.
Never.
I would never say
I mean,
that.
And then the other problem with it, of course, in scene is that, like, they made this dramatic choice to have her be this Downton Abbey SNL character, instead of which she should have just obviously been, like, a more relaxed version of this
yeah.
Queen's person.
Yeah, because you can even have the same sensibility of, like, cover up the hole, blah, blah, blah. But you have to be like, Reginald, come into the...
same sensibility. Yeah. She could have the same perspective. She could have the same stuff. And she doesn't need to be this funny, interesting, weird aristocrat from yeah. another century. Right.
She doesn't need to be surprised somebody's eating when they're offered
yeah.
food.
It's crazy.
Like, what are you talking about? They put out the macarons.
You eat a macaron. So
no,
this is the
eating.
Second instance in a row where we've seen a guest actor of pretty high caliber be yeah. kind of misused.
Oh, who was the other one?
And it's not...
Wallace Shawn is
Wallace
Herb
Shawn.
Smith, I would say, was misused too.
And we know Jane Lynch is like... The problem with this is like... I think, well, Jane Lynch maybe doesn't have the range to be able to not be silly, but it's like, we've seen Jane Lynch in other roles be super subtle.
Oh,
and
she wasn't silly as that nurse.
Yeah, she's been a million.
Yeah, she was serious as shit as that nurse.
Yeah, she's like Academy Award level, like, good at acting. So there's no reason for her to have done this if
yeah.
they didn't direct her.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not like you're casting... Like, just someone who only does comedy.
Right, it's not like Rob Schneider or something.
Right, it's like, if you're from the Christopher Guest troupe, you can
yeah.
do, like, the little subtle
yeah.
things.
Yeah.
I also feel like she probably even played that character down. Like,
yeah.
I bet they were
and
like,
they
be this character. She's like, okay. Like, she was
yeah.
almost subtle doing this
yeah.
crazy character, and it, so it came off crazy, but, like, I feel like she even downplayed it.
I felt bad for her almost as the character.
I mean... I just want to see that show now.
Yeah.
That's all. Like, when I watch it, I'm just like, well, now I have to watch this woman do her thing all mm-hmm. the time.
So this leads up to David Paymer's character coming to the Gaslight after Susie convinces him. He's like, I never go downtown, blah, blah, blah. And he gets here. He's like, you know what? You have a really nice energy here. There's this really cool thing you've built, blah, 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 blah.
You know, there's a lot of energy in this room. It's impressive.
Yeah, we were turning people away out there. Thanks for this, Harry. Really. I'm gonna go check on my girl.
Go be a manager.
Go be a manager and do that. And he's nice. He's
yeah.
a nice man
yeah.
to Susie. And then Midge gets up on stage and she starts
and
doing
shits
the material.
All over
it.
Everything.
Yeah, she shits the bed.
Deliberately shits the bed. I really liked the fact that, like, in the next episode, no spoilies. If you're listening to this and you haven't watched the next episode, don't listen to what I'm going to say. That, like, their relationship didn't completely fall apart over this, because if
hers and Susie's.
Yeah, if. We'd been looking, if this realistically happened in the way that the series has been written up until now, Susie would have straight up dropped her as a client and been like, all right, you're too much of a loose cannon. I don't know how to deal with you. You say you're serious and then you do the opposite.
Yeah.
Because
right.
like what she did was inexcusable.
And unprofessional.
It
and
was
like,
stupid. It was
yeah.
really stupid. It's like you were killing already with your first joke.
Yeah. And fine if you want to go off on her and maybe talk about this and, like, do a joke based on it. Like, Midge, as we've seen, she has the ability to do and write a joke about it later on. And do it in a downtown room where there's no stakes.
Not in front of her eight.
Not
her
in
manager.
Front of her manager.
Like, who you're trying to get booked for.
And I know, as a stand-up, in my head, I would never... ever do a joke about something in front of someone who's there related to that
it
person.
It affects them.
It affects,
or,
your,
yeah,
it affects
yeah.
your delivery of that joke. You yeah. can't say it the same way.
I also like, and by like, I mean hate, the how, like, there's this thing about Midge where she can't be controlled. Like, stand-ups can't be controlled. They just have to say what's in their head. And it's like, that's not true at all.
Completely
it's insane.
Not true.
Yeah, so what happens is she starts doing the material and then she makes a pivot turn. So I guess maybe if there's apologists for this scene, they would say, well, really, she was talking about Rose.
Yeah.
So Rose became Sophie in her head. So what
yeah.
she when she's raging, because she does start talking about it at first, and then she transitions into Sophie. So it's like misplaced anger
yeah.
at Rose.
She's so focused on me, and I don't understand it, because so what if I work?
So what if I get divorced? So what if I'm alone? Why do women care about how people look at them or see them? All women. Beautiful women. Successful women. Do you know Sophie Lennon?
And the way it's written, and we'll listen to a little bit of it.
Because it is funny.
The clip is titled, Midge Doxes Sophie. And I don't know, because it gets into this weird space where it's almost like semi-political. Mm. And the first time she's been semi-political since that Washington Square Park speech or whatever.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
Sophie Lennon. You're going to sit in your million-dollar townhouse on some chair that's historical because the Mad King George got the trots on it and tell me that men won't think I'm funny because I don't look like a dump truck? Why do women have to pretend to be something that they're not? Why do we have to pretend to be stupid when we're not stupid?
Oh, my God.
Why do we have to pretend to be helpless when we're not helpless? Yeah. Why do we have to pretend to be sorry when we have nothing to be sorry about?
Amen.
Why do we have to pretend we're not hungry when we're hungry?
I'm with her.
Also, it's like, you're super skinny. Shut, like.
I know.
Not and everyone can be that.
Rich.
And measuring her thighs every day.
Yeah.
So there's like...
I also, it's like everything she's saying, I do kind of like dig it. But it's like, why can't that be in response to something a man said? Like, why do we have to put down the only other like strong... Female not the only other strong female, but like...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
I
that seems so crazy.
I almost want Imogen to do a set after her to be like, you think... What's her name?
Bailey?
No,
oh, Sophie?
Midge?
The character Midge is using, the name she's using.
Oh, Amanda Gleason.
Amanda
you think
Gleason.
Amanda Gleason's so woke... Well, she measures her thighs every day. Like, she'd be great if.
And then
like,
keeps going. Midge gets up. You think Imogen's so compassionate?
No, Imogen's baby gets up and he's like, arr, arr, arr.
And was like, woo!
Yeah.
Amen.
Thank you.
He does little baby bows.
Yeah, because that was just unfounded. This character would never do that.
Well, and it's such a rebuttal to like, even if you were just going off the handle. If you're talking to a person, much less a crowd of 100 or whatever is there, you would edit it. So a friend of mine or this person I was talking to, like even just the most basic of fictional veils, not Sophie Lennon, who lives at 1234 blah, 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 blah street. Like you wouldn't just
give out her address?
Say this. Because up to this point, all of her stand-up, except for that weird party stuff, has been, this happened to me today. Okay, I'm going to talk about it now. So this happened to me today, and other than like the embellishments of like I moan like sex as a ghost, there's not any sort of like fictional filter being applied to
it. It's like she's a robot that can't talk about things unless they happen to her that day.
But she has been like that
through the series. Nobody's told her like, hey, stand up, say that all the time, like something happened to them today and it didn't happen to them that day.
Yeah.
She's like, it happened to me today. But even beyond that, the very idea that a stand-up comedian of any like stature who has been doing it for any amount of time would ever go on a showcase in front of industry and do anything besides what they had rehearsed, even if they're a shitty stand-up and they're unprofessional and every other, that's the
especially
only...
Especially then.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only arena in which you will perform the set as written and you won't go off from that.
Mm-hmm. No, like, exactly. That's the most
unbelievable
part. Every
stand-up wants to get ahead. It's so crazy.
And also, that's when you're going to probably feel the most comfortable and confident.
Yeah, it's
like
bananas.
Doing the stuff you know
is keeping
kill.
To the script. Yeah.
Like but, she, ugh.
But I do feel like it's not, I don't like what she did, but I don't think it's totally out of character for her because she has done a few things where I'm just like, fucking quit it. Like, what are you doing?
Quit it.
Yeah, she's very entitled.
She loves to, like, point at, like, the audacity of telling everyone at your wedding that there's shrimp in the spring rolls is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah,
like, why would you ever do that?
Yeah. We keep going back to that moment, like, what's going on there?
Yeah, I think she thinks she's being punk rock and rebellious and she's being an entitled brat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't endear us to the character. If anything, it just, especially with the episode ending on Susie's horrified face, and she is the, like, deal with the brunt of it. And Paymer says, you're never going to work in this town. Like, revenge, basically. Mm-hmm. Like, not only do I not like you, I'm going to destroy you and Amanda Gleason and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you're just... Yeah, okay, Sophie's our hero. This is a story about a woman who tried to help someone else and she kept screwing her over.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Susie story.
Exactly. If I was in Midge's shoes and somebody like Sophie came along and gave me that advice, I would be crestfallen a little bit and I'd go, that sucks.
Yeah.
And it would influence me. And actually what might happen is my showcase wouldn't go that well.
That's because what I thought was going to happen.
I'd get on stage and I'd do my jokes, but there'd be a moment of like,
should I try to be sexier? Yeah, should I try to be more womanly?
Or should I cover up my hole? You know? Should
I make myself more of a... She's talking about her mouth
Yeah.
I think vagina.
Vagina. Or she's...
But
yeah. Like, whatever it is.
Her ear?
Whatever it is, it might just influence her. The best take I would say would be for her to perform the set as written, but just not have as much life and pizzazz. And be, because that's what really happens when you do a showcase in the industry. You do the set, it's super rote, there's no energy behind it because you've done it 1,000 times, and the industry in the room just blankets everything with like a, there's just like a feeling in the room that it's just like, you can't mess up, and it's not invigorating, and so people don't like it and they don't respond well, and it just kind of goes
badly. The problem though, like everything you're saying is right and exactly how it should go, but the problem is this is a TV show where they've already done that for the last few episodes where she's like kind of at one point like bombed and wanted to quit comedy, and it's like it is time in the show for her to just kill it, and I guess they couldn't have her kill it with their set because it's not the last episode.
Yeah. No, I'm saying like not bomb, but not kill, like that middle ground that we're always in as stand-ups, which I think is so interesting, and that's like that's the thing to talk about that I find fascinating.
It'd be interesting
which is,
to
it
explore.
It plays with
the
energy of the room. It plays with what's going through the comic's mind as they're delivering the jokes. Because if you're the audience and watching, and you see her tell her jokes as written and the same as they've always been, and see the audience like, ha ha, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that dies right away and she has to start over.
And then Paymer's reaction, who's a pro, he'd be like,
oh, she's good.
It was okay.
Yeah. Or he'd be like, she's great. She's not ready, but she's great. Something like that.
Yeah.
Like, why? She's not ready, but
that's
totally true.
Reality.
And then she could come off stage and be like, I had a horrible set. And then Susie could be like, no, you had a great set. Because, like, I feel like comics are always like, sucked. Like,
that's
one of the most unrealistic things about the show is she's always like, I killed.
Yeah. Like, Midge's own confidence is
yeah,
the least
that would never happen.
Believable part of the show. It sucked. The first time I watched it, I watched through my fingers with my hands over my eyes. It was like so uncomfortable and not a pleasant viewing experience. Like, like that poster for that 9/11 movie. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Extremely loud and incredibly close.
Right.
Oh. They made that into a movie and a long time ago? You're referencing the poster
Tim
now?
With Tim Hanks, yeah. It came out 7 years ago, okay, so it's pretty timely.
All right, so that poster that was around 7 years ago that I should know.
Okay, just think of Kevin from Home Alone, but then his hands keep sliding up to his
I think
face.
Of it every night before I go to bed.
You think of it every night.
I can't sleep without it.
Oh, boy.
That image.
The first time I watched this episode, because I rewatched it before this, and
we appreciate it.
You're my pleasure.
That's a professional podcast guest.
I also rewatched it.
Well, I hope so.
It's not as impressive. But I didn't, like, I am really oblivious sometimes. And the first time I watched it, I was like, you go, girl. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? But then the second time, I was like, but for who? For what?
Yeah.
You know, I got it the second time. But I think it's, like, because I feel like I had been in the shoes.
Yeah.
Literally with other comics telling you, like, how you have to do comedy as a female.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I loved it so much. And then I love that she told her off. But then later I was like, yeah, it's a bit bullshit.
Yeah. A bit bullshit.
It's a bit unnecessary.
Well, it's just wild that, like, in the hour we've been in the room, really for the last 30 minutes, we've thought of at least 3 other plausible ways it could have gone down.
Yeah.
And I would think the Paladinos would have a little more time.
Right.
And stakes on the line than... 3 dummies in LA just riffing on a podcast.
Excuse me?
Wow.
2 dummies and 1 genius riffing on a podcast. One dummy and 2 geniuses riffing on a podcast.
Yeah, it's so smart.
I'm okay with being the dummy.
No, I'm the dummy.
It's okay.
You're the dummy now, dog. So it just feels like, this was super, this is a frustrating viewing experience.
It really is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
hope you had fun, everybody. Now, let's do some Twitter Q&A.
Tweet,
tweet. Tweet, tweet. Tweeter Q&A. We got a good amount for this one.
That's all fun. Right.
Bethany says, why do you think Susie said she's going to bomb with such glee about Midge opening for Sophie?
She's going to bomb.
Oh, I have an answer.
And do you buy that Susie and Midge would both think that Sophie's "How fat are you?" act was funny? Well, I guess we covered that, but she's going to bomb. How did that strike you?
Because you want your stand-ups to bomb in different arenas, and it's like, it's fun. It's no, there's nothing more fun than watching stand-ups that you love and respect bomb. Mm-hmm. As a stand-up or maybe a connoisseur of stand-up that is trying to train your comedian, there's nothing more fun because you watch this person that you love struggle with something that you know they're going to eventually get over, but it's so funny to like watch them it's like pratfalling almost. Like, it's like watching somebody attempt something you know that they can't do and then watching them fall and flounder, and it's, you think it's going to be like, it's really uncomfortable for the audience, but as a comedian, it's the best. I love it.
You love bombing?
I love watching other people bomb. Like, not you, but like, not.
If we're on
tour together, I don't want to watch you bomb. But right. Like, say you're at a group show and there's a bunch of different people going up and it's just not a good room and nobody's killing. You know who's coming up next and you're like excited to see people either turn the room around or bomb. Like,
right. No, you're not wrong.
Watching someone bomb is fun.
Yeah. I guess so. Totally.
Like,
I relate.
Especially somebody really good. Like, you know, like if you ever watch like Rory Scovel do poorly or something like that.
Because they're funny while they do it.
No, it's like, I mean, yeah, but no. Also they're funny. You know what's because you know what's going through their mind, mm-hmm. and you watch them try to grapple with it, and it's just interesting.
Yeah, I can get on board with that. I think.
Like watching an animal backed in a corner.
I don't know what it is. Like, I just love it.
The reason Susie wanted Mitch to bomb those because she's just been killing so much, and like to bomb in a different setting and to try new things, it's only gonna make her like so much stronger.
Yeah, it's like it's gonna up her powers. If this is a video game, her bombing, her ability to handle tough crowds, points would go up 50%.
Having a good set is almost entirely useless.
Yeah, it's true.
And having a bad set is so useful.
It's so
really
useful.
You feel like you've learned a lot more.
Yeah, and then if you have recorded it and you finally like if you listen to it again, if you can get enough confidence to listen to it again, because I did that on one show where we were on the road and I fucking ate it, and then I listened to it later and I was like, oh, I see where, like, all the places I was slow and all the,
and you learn your own weaknesses really fast that way, and it's like it's delicious to watch somebody learn that stuff. So it's like, I get why Susie is like excited about it. It's the next step, you know.
Yeah,
that's why. And also them thinking that how fat, I think for the time period it makes sense. I know, it's fun. It's participatory.
I guess. I think it's the nostalgia thing, too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's fun. It's participatory in this total amount of nostalgia.
Like, if I went to see Smash Mouth in concert, I'd be bobbing along to All Star, even though I know All Star isn't a great song. Hey, now. Becca says, where are we in the timeline? Susie says Midge has been working on her tight 10 for months, supposedly since the breakdown episode 6. But Abe says it's only been about a month ago that Joel came back to Midge and said no.
Well, I guess
I don't know.
Since the breakdown has been a month?
No, she said a few months, right?
She says she's been working on her tight 10 for a few months.
But
now,
do you think, the real question is, when did Joel come back? How many months had it been when he came back after the restaurant, right? That's when it was?
Well, he came back in episode 3 at the end of that.
So I would say that she had been doing stand-up for about a month at that point. So Susie's saying collectively, the entire time she's been doing stand-up, it's been months.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, too.
I'm going to give a liberal. It's a TV show.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good point. Is that an awful answer?
No, it's a TV show.
It's also
Timeline stuff. I'm kind of, this was a good question, but I'm kind of not interested in, like,
I don't get hung up on that
stuff.
But
it was 2 weeks ago, and then it was 3 weeks, because I feel like it'll almost always fall apart.
Yeah.
If you start to look at it too closely.
It didn't bother me that dragon got to the ice place real quick in Game of Thrones.
I was just going to bring that up.
So funny.
That's the one instance in which I think it does bug me.
And it could have bothered me, but I just like really am like, you know.
Well, to me, that show has so many bigger instances of ridiculous plot holes that it's like, well, who cares?
A girl has no chill.
It's not. A girl has no chill. Exactly. Yeah.
Exactly. Kara says, why would Sophie reveal such a huge secret to someone she literally just met?
Yeah, that's...
Because she's a trustworthy lady, even though she's a little uptight.
That's another reason that... I agree with the caller.
The caller?
I agree. I think that's crazy. I think she's like, I want to vet you, so I'm going to vet you and also let you completely vet me and expose.
Yeah. And ruin my
career. I'll
tell
you one thing. She won't be doing that again.
Yeah. Okay?
Yeah, that's true. That's
so
true.
Midge basically did the equivalent of Hannibal set talking about Cosby.
Yeah.
And Sophie is Cosby.
But yeah, yeah, but didn't deserve it the same way.
Yeah.
Which one didn't
Cosby
deserve it the same
Sophie
way?
Cosby and Sophie aren't doing the same crime.
You think you're saying Cosby didn't deserve it?
No, no,
the same
no. That's not what I'm saying.
Interesting take.
Yeah.
Wow. We have it on record here.
No. Can you bleep that?
Bleep that. Yeah, I think that's all the good Twitter questions. Right. Yeah.
Well,
thanks everybody.
Thanks for asking those things. They're very thought-provoking.
Very thought-provoking.
They provoked my thoughts.
Like those people, I'm like, oh, they watch TV better than me.
Let's get into our final thoughts about the episode. The way this works, Georgia, is we give our mazel-toves and our schlamazels. And mazel-toves is anything we like about the episode. I like this. I like this. This gets a mazel-tove. This gets a mazel-tove. And our schlamazels is like, what do we not like about the episode? So, Alice, we'll start with you. What are your mazel-toves or toves or schlamazels?
Well, I'm
going
to steal this from Joe, but I think that I'd give a huge mazel-tove to the montage in the beginning.
Okay.
I do love a montage, and also that specific iteration of, like, breaking down the joke writing process and seeing her in reality is awesome. I will give a giant schlamazel to pretty much everything else in the episode. I'll give a mazel tov to Jane Lynch in general and her performance, even though it didn't work.
Trying.
It's just so funny. I mean, I really do. I mean it. Like, I want ASP to write another show just about this weird aristocratic woman and her butler. So, schlamazel to the weird 180 at the end that Midge takes and throwing Susie under the bus and throwing her career under the bus for no reason.
All right, Georgia.
My mazel tov goes to Abe when he keeps coming out of the room when they're wrapping gifts.
Yes, for the birthday party.
So funny. He is so funny. His timing, he's like also so hunky. There's something about that kind of male, his masculine energy,
paternal,
which is really great. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Hey, you okay?
And also,
you
I love that
sweating
he brought,
profusely.
I also give a mazel tov. I like that he brought over a divorce lawyer. I like that he's, like, on his daughter's side.
I forgot about that scene. We didn't talk about it.
Because it's like, it was too bitty.
Here's what I would say. If you don't like that bit, like, of the, we're preparing for an old man and it's not an old man, like, you don't have any business watching an ASP show. Because that's super, like, to me, it's like, that stuff is very, Dan and Amy, right?
That's very Dan.
You think? I thought it was so funny. Like, we're just all the peaches and... I did.
Make sure there's no lumps.
I loved when all these soft foods.
I thought the funny bit was when they were just talking super loud in the kitchen because I kept being like, they gotta be able to hear them.
Yeah.
And a lot of times in shows they'll do that, but they'll be like, they can't hear them for no reason.
Right. Yeah,
and this show they were like, we can hear everything you guys are talking about.
Yeah,
I love that.
That's a mazel tov too. For me.
Shmazel tov.
Shlamazel.
Shlamazel. I mean, I know everyone's saying this, but I guess the set at the end, I didn't like.
Oof.
I found the church scene too. I guess it's not called church.
It's a synagogue.
Fuck me. The synagogue scene. I liked it, but it was it was like kind of frustrating. I was like, just shut the fuck up and let everyone pray.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is when Rose is freaking out.
Why do you have a fur coat?
Really, we are ruining Lehadori.
I think I deserve to know some fucking thing, don't I, Miriam? I mean, don't I deserve to know anything?
Rose, look where we are.
I mean, I clearly didn't deserve to know that Abe knew that your husband came back. Right? I clearly didn't deserve to know that the thing I've been waiting for all these months, the reconciliation of Ethan's mother and father, I didn't deserve to know that that happened. Okay, fine. I get that. That's life. But the least you can do, Miriam, is tell me where you got the goddamn fur coat.
And then the rabbi sneezes and the guy's like, told you.
Yeah. Not great.
Yeah, that wasn't a great bit because at the beginning I was like, why are you even saying he sneezed? Oh, just you can bring this joke back.
Yeah.
Anyways. And also... Rose wouldn't do that. Rose,
she wouldn't.
Rose, the most person most concerned with appearances.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
really?
See,
that's her breakdown?
They don't know what to do with Rose. She goes back to the fortune teller. She's a different person.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do. And that's why I don't like her, because they haven't figured her out.
That's true.
So I give a schlamazel to that, to the whole Rose stuff. I just didn't care about it. And it's cemented. She's always going to be Even lower than Joel, my least favorite character of the show. Mm. Well, and understand, like, coming from Gilmore Girls, where the ultimate matriarch was my favorite character. Mm-hmm. I'm only going to compare it to that so much. And this is just like, what's her thing? What do you care about?
Because Midge is the Lorelai of this show.
Right. So I think, like, is this going to be an Emily? And obviously it's not going to be the same.
Oh, right. Duh, Emily, of course.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I'm so stupid.
Oh, you thought, I thought Rose was the
Lorelai of the show. And it's like, okay.
She used to be. Maybe she used to be. Maybe. But, yeah, so I'm just not into any of her stuff. I don't care about what she cares about. I don't care that
you don't know what she cares about.
No, and I don't care that she was offended that no one told her about a thing and she was out of the loop. So I'll give a shmeezel to that. Yeah. Isley, what are you going to say?
I feel like we're going to get some... I think culturally there's been some... Like, she's an important character as a Jewish mother because, you know, Jewish matriarchs have their cultural touch points that are relative and relevant to this story. So, I mean, there's been points during the telling of the story where she's been on point. Like she's been in character with that. Like, having, like... And I don't know, but, like, I feel like people have said things before about, like, both parents being... And their family dynamic being very, like, what they experienced. Mm-hmm. So that kind of makes me feel like they've gotten it right from a certain perspective, but they haven't, like... They're like, oh, just Jewish mother. And then they just kind of gave up after that.
Right. You know? Yeah. It feels like...
Where it's like, why can't we have a really well-written, fleshed-out Jewish mother character where you understand her motivations?
Where Abe has charm and sincerity and musicality and interests.
Because like, Georgia, I kind of want to be like,
swooning.
Oh, being left out? Like, maybe that's a thing. Like, maybe being left out in not only as a mother, but like in that in culturally is like such a deep wound.
And also, they said that Midge and Rose were always better connected, and the brother and Abe were always better connected, and I think maybe she's like, I'm left out now. Me and Midge tell each other everything, and now she's telling you, and you guys never even talk.
That's so,
yeah, maybe that's a part of it. But then again, it does feel like repeated beats from Gilmore, where it's like Emily would get left out, and Richard had to bring over the dollhouse, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So shlemazel of that, mazel tov to the montage, mazel tov to all of Abe's stuff, and especially his tenderness with Joel and, like, reaching out and really caring about this guy that kind of screwed over his daughter. Mm-hmm. Mazel tov to that. Mazel tov to the great David Paymer, who makes a character that I still enjoy watching, even when he's at odds and opposition with our heroes of the show.
Wow.
Georgia, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
I had the best time.
We had the best time. Season 2 is a-coming.
Oh, my God.
Season 2 is a-coming, and look out for Georgia on the road with me. Hopefully I'll get some dates coming up.
Yeah, anything, where can people find you? What do you have to plug?
Well, if you live in L.A., every Wednesday at the Holloway, which is a bar in Echo Park, I have a stand-up show called Big Daddy, and it's free, and it's super fun, and like... Alice is doing it tomorrow, but I know this is probably going to come out later.
Monday, so I will have done it.
Do you have to be big or a daddy to attend?
No, you can be a tiny woman.
Okay,
you can be a small mommy.
A small mommy. Okay.
Small mama. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm just at Georgia Brooks, like, everywhere. I've got a website.
Georgia.
Yeah, made up.
Brooks.
By my parents, not by me. Okay. No Amanda Gleason over here.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Alice, what do you have to plug?
Alice Wetterland on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me at the Tempe Improv beginning of March. And that's Tempe, Arizona, not Tempe, Lithuania, which might not be a place anyway. And I'll be at in Columbus, Ohio, promoting the Bulldog Rescue, which I still don't know the name of because I never look it up.
Bulldogs.
Like a real
Wow.
There's a Bulldog Rescue that is having me perform and I'm just
like
trying to
look it up. Are
you going
to do your cat material? Because that's going to be really
I think I might do my cat material. And I'm writing
all the dogs are like,
I'm writing some specific
dog-related
material.
You can do that Todd Glass thing he does in his special.
Bullshit.
Where he's like, I swear to God, there was a pigeon here last night. I swear to God. And they liked this pigeon.
It's the Sawmill Animal Hospital benefiting Buckeye Bulldog Rescue in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh.
And that will be on the 23rd. So please come out to that. And otherwise, Kevin.
And otherwise, listen to...
Oh, Treks in the City. Kevin has to remind me to plug my podcast. Listen to Treks in the City. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or my patreon.com/treksinthecity.
Wherever you get your podcasts and also your Patreons. You can subscribe by my money, and you can give us money and listen to the bonus episodes, which I'm recording one today. Or you can listen for free on Apple Podcasts, and it's our Star Trek Recap Podcast.
Recap Podcast.
On the Forever Dog Network.
Did you like the Discovery finale?
I haven't watched it yet. I have to watch it this afternoon because we're recapping it today.
But have you liked it up to this point?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've liked it a lot. Great. There's been some, but I've liked it.
You literally put yourself to sleep talking about whether you liked it or not.
I did. I just got tired because I have to nap every 20 minutes.
Well, you can...
Like a baby.
You can find me at Kevin T. Porter. You can listen to my other podcast, Good Christian Fun. We're only on Stitcher Premium now. We moved. Wouldn't that be crazy?
Oh, I was like, oh, wow, oh, doing geez. Well.
Stitcher Premium, I have mixed feelings about.
And really?
Yeah, I do. I do. Because it's like Patreon, but it's not, but it's less available.
Yeah.
Do you have any feelings about it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't subscribe to it, so I don't really know what the experience is like.
Exactly.
Patreon's so easy.
Patreon is like... plug it into whatever you're using. Mm-hmm. Stitcher's like, go to the app.
Yeah.
It's like the CISO of podcasting stuff where it's like, yeah. I don't think it's going to... it's tough. Anyway, that being said, I will gladly do a Stitcher Premium show.
Yeah, right.
Whatever you'd like.
I'm on a veil.
Well, Georgia, thanks for joining us for the discussion.
So stop it.
And listeners, we'll see you next week for the last episode
of
season one of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goyes. Let's go out with the song they went out with in this episode. A Girl in Trouble is a Temporary Thing by Romeo Void. Alice keeps yawning.
I can't. I'm sorry. I'm getting tired.
It's okay.
I was sick.
You're a trooper. You've been
sick. I'm used
sick.
To sleeping like 14 hours a day lately.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow. Like
that's what happens when you're a celeb.
Exhaustion.
And we encourage all of you out there to fall asleep for at least 14 hours while listening to this show. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.